Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us. Have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. I hope you had a good holiday, 4th of July. What do you think about having the 4th on a Tuesday? It's not bad. You have a weekend, and then Monday, for a lot of folks, a regular work day. I know some folks took a vacation day. And then you have a holiday. And now it's Wednesday already, so, you know, we're on the downhill slide for the week. It's good, yeah. Of course, it doesn't work out that way very often, right? Most of our holidays now are on Monday, for one thing. You know, thanks to the federal government's Uniform Holiday Law, or whatever the heck the name of that thing was that they passed way back when, 40 years ago. So Thanksgiving, of course, is always on a Thursday, but most of our other holidays on Monday anymore. Open talk to begin the program today. Phone number is 283-2525. We have guests who will be joining us later on the program. Interesting conversation coming up, I think, with Patricia Harmon, who is a midwife, a certified midwife. In fact, she is a nurse midwife and now also a novelist, too. So we'll talk with her. What else do we have coming up today? Darlene Sansone, a Better Kid Care Coordinator with Penn State Extension, will also be joining us later on the program today. So we have lots of stuff to talk about. Open talk to begin with, 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. A great story. It was actually just brought to my attention about 15 minutes ago by one of our news people in the news department, Ryan Saylor. One of our reporters who said, did you see the story that was on the, was it the Today Show today, in advance of a History Channel special that claims Amelia Earhart was captured by the Japanese after she crashed her plane back in the late 1930s? And I said to Ryan, no, I didn't see it. He said, what? Just popping up online, so got a copy of it here. I'm always interested in Amelia Earhart because, ever since I found out that she did some of her training for her planned around-the-world airplane flight at Butler County Airport in Penn Township. Now, I don't know whether it was called Butler County Airport back then. Now it's the Pittsburgh-Butler Regional Airport. The name has changed over the years. It was Butler Graham at one point. But she trained there for a while. I first heard about that from the late Dick May, who just kind of dropped it into the conversation one time. I said, really? Amelia Earhart? Yes, yes. So anytime I see a story about her, I'm fascinated. I don't know when this History Channel special is coming up. It was previewed today on NBC. I don't know. Does NBC own the History Channel? I don't know why they'd be promoting one of their... Anyway, they found this picture. Somebody found this picture of a Japanese ship pulling a 38-foot-long item that is undetermined. Earhart's plane was 38 feet 7 inches long. Interesting. Maybe more on that. I'll check it out, I guess. I'm not a big fan of the History Channel, but I'll check that one out. Open talk at 283-2525, our number, open talk, 283-2525. Let's go to the phones. Hi, caller, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Hi, Dave, great show, long-time listener.
Oh, thanks for that, my friend, thank you.
Yeah, it's a great, great show, great, great coverage of everything. Hey, I know Amelia Earhart actually has relatives that I think it's Lower Borough, or there's some Earharts out there somewhere on that part of town that she's actually related to them.
That's interesting. I never really got to chat with Dick May, the late Dick May, about, you know, why the heck was she doing training at Butler County Airport? So maybe that explains it. Maybe, you know, she was visiting relatives here in this area or something. I don't know.
But I saw another documentary, and this is kind of gross, that they found parts of her plane on this island, and they saw that these crabs only came out at night. And not only did they come out at night, but they ate everything. And whether she climbed a tree, whether she slept on a beach, they would have devoured her without even the bones. As gross as that sounds, that's the one I heard. But now this one here that the Japanese had her, I'm not putting it past them, though.
Now, this is not the first time we've heard this. This is a new photograph that photoshopping. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
It could be a hoax.
Like the Loch Ness Monster. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But there's also a group, and I don't mean to belabor the point here, but representatives from the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery say they think this latest theory is hooey. They think she landed on the island of Niku Moroa and actually transmitted distress signals trying to request a rescue, but was ultimately stranded. Now, you have to remember when this took place. It's 1937. That's when she disappeared along with, I think, her navigator was on the plane, too. And so this is, you know, it's right before World War II broke out, but the Japanese had already invaded China, so they were, a lot of military stuff going on in the South Pacific, even though the U.S. wasn't involved yet.
Yeah. That's good. How did the Brew Fest go a couple weeks ago? Did you attend that?
I did not. I was out of town, but I had good reports from three different people who were there. In fact, we had some folks from the Butler Downtown Group on the program last week, and they said it was a sellout. They had, I think they had 400 tickets they were going to sell, and they got went through those, and somehow they had 30 more that turned up. And they said, well, let's put those online, too. And they were gone instantly. So they are better than they could possibly have imagined. You know.
Oh, that's great. That's great news.
Yeah.
Hey, the other question I was going to ask you, when's the next Wing Fest that, you know, that they have the best wings in Butler County? When does that happen?
Boy, you have me on that. I'm not familiar with that. Is that something?
I know my buddies down at Sports and Spirits in Evans City have won every year, undefeated. But I just wonder when the next one is, so.
Well, we'll put that question out. I'm not familiar with the competition, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know anything.
Well, it'd be a good show. You go down there, and you know that place is no bigger than your living room. But they have great wings, and Ray and Deb run that place. And I think Debbie's on either the planning commission or the council or something in Evans City. There's great people. When my kids were in, donated money to all the booster organizations they ever were asked.
And, oh, that's nice.
Just great. Yeah, they're great people. So, check that out. Let us know, Dave.
We'll do.
I'm the best person on it, you're telling me.
Will do. Thanks.
All right, man.
Thanks. Okay.
Good talking to you.
Same here. I was afraid that we had lost him there. We had just a quick drop out of a couple of words, but he was still there. Obviously, his cell clicked off for a moment. As great as cell phones are, every once in a while they do that, don't they? You could be talking along. I was involved in a lengthy conversation a couple of months ago with somebody, and all of a sudden, just went dead. And, you know, sometimes you keep talking, and then you feel like a goofball whenever you realize that there's nobody on the other end. And then it came back on again. Phone number is 283-2525. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program today, 283-2525. Anybody know anything more about the Amelia Earhart thing, or why she was doing training and practicing here in Butler County at what is now Pittsburgh-Butler Regional Airport. I have no idea. The plane that she used, by the way, if you're thinking of the Spirit of St. Louis, by the way, that Jimmy Stewart movie was just on over the weekend. I've seen it probably 8 or 10 times. I didn't watch it this time. But TCM, Turner Classic Movies, devoted the holiday to, I think they called it movies that demonstrated the American spirit or something like that. And Spirit of St. Louis was on. And Jimmy Stewart did a wonderful turn as Charles Lindbergh, making the first solo transatlantic flight. The Spirit of St. Louis was a very, very small plane, very tiny. The first time I ever saw it, and it's hanging from the ceiling at the Smithsonian Institution, the National Air and Space Museum wing of the Smithsonian. It's hanging from the ceiling. And I couldn't believe it was the actual plane. It was so small. It's a single engine. I mean, if you think Piper Cub, you know, if that gives you an image, it's probably not even that big. I mean, it's shockingly tiny. And Lindbergh had outfitted it. It was mostly all gas tanks, to be honest with you, after he rigged it up to try this flight. Still an amazing thing. Whether you like Charles Lindbergh or not, I've done some reading about him, and I am not an admirer any longer, but certainly an amazing thing, his flight across the ocean. Well, anyway, my point is, Amelia Earhart, when she was trying this around-the-world thing, this was not a small plane. It was a two-engine. I don't know exactly what type of plane it was. I would say it was similar to a C-47. Well, that's the military designation. I think that's a DC-8 in the civilian world, but about that size. So, I mean, you know, it's obviously not a huge passenger aircraft, but it's not a little puddle jumper either. Two big engines. And she was trying to fly around the world, not nonstop. You couldn't even begin to do that. To cross the Pacific Ocean, she was island hopping, and then she'd have to sit down and gas up, you know. And that's when she disappeared, flying from, I don't remember off the top of my head from what island to what island, but it was in the South Pacific, and she disappeared. And, well, now there's another theory out there of what happened to her, and a photograph, not of Amelia Earhart or her navigator, but just this Japanese ship pulling something, some unidentified object that they can measure and have determined that is exactly 38 feet long. Same length as Earhart's plane. How do they measure that from a photograph? Well, they know what ship it is. And so they can go to the Japanese records and they know how long the ship is, and they can do, you know, algebraic equations and say, okay, that thing that they're tugging is 38 feet long. Same exact length as Earhart's plane. I don't know. We'll see. Sad story. I've never read a biography of Amelia Earhart, so I don't know much about her personal life. I didn't know much about Charles Lindbergh's life either. I mean, I knew that, you know, his son, he and Ann Lindbergh's son was kidnapped and killed, but I didn't know his political leanings were very strange. Very strange. He was an isolationist for a long time, leading up to World War II, and then he was, you know, said some peculiar things that almost sounded like support for Nazism. It was a very strange bird. It was so bad that he wanted to enlist in the United States Air Corps. What was it called back then? The Army Air Corps. This is before the Air Force. And they wouldn't let him in because of his statements and so on, sympathetic toward the Nazi cause. They wouldn't let him in. And he finally, petitioned FDR or something like that, and I forget how it was finally resolved. I don't think he was ever commissioned, but it's very strange. Very strange political tendencies. And I'm not talking Republican, Democrat. I don't even know what he was, to be honest with you. I have no idea what his party registration was. Don't care. But it was the sympathizing with the Nazi cause that was the problem. Okay. Aviation history always fascinates me, always has. When I was a kid, I was the first one to run outside and look up in the sky when I heard a plane going over. Did you do that when you were a kid? I still do it. I was out on a golf course one day last week. Oh, and I was going to look that up, and I never did. I'll have to leave myself a note here. I want to look up the colors of the WOW aircraft that just started the flights to Iceland, from Pittsburgh to Iceland. They just started, like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or something like that. They do direct flights, and they've had heavy booking. They've already added an extra flight. I think it's 5 days a week now they do this, nonstop from Pittsburgh to Reykjavik, Iceland. And I saw a plane going over. I was on the golf course, looked up. And, you know, when it's a passenger aircraft that's low enough to see what color it is, that's pretty low. So it must have been coming into Pittsburgh International to land. But it was red and silver, and I have no idea what the colors of the WOW airline is. I'll have to look that up. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. I don't know of any airline that has those particular colors. Very strange. Let's go back to the phones. It's Open Talk at 283-2525. Caller, thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave. This is Jerry down in Zillionople.
Hi there, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Purple was the color of that WOW Airlines, I'm pretty sure.
Purple?
Yeah. Okay. When they had the first debut of that, they had the and their airline attendants were on television and all purple, and I think they showed the plane was purple also.
Hmm. Well, this plane that I saw had, and this is going to sound goofy, the nose of the plane, and I'm talking about not just the nose cone, but, you know, like the first 20 feet or so of the plane, bright red. And I think, gosh, I wish I'd looked this up before I started talking about it. I think Norwegian Airlines has the front portion of their plane totally red, not just stripes or anything, just red. But I have no idea what a Norwegian, there's no Norwegian planes that fly over here, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't think so.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, they've started transatlantic flights, Norwegian Air. But they wouldn't be over Western Pennsylvania, not as low as this plane was.
Yeah, that's unusual.
So it's purple. Yeah. That's the WOW colors. Planes are purple.
I'm pretty sure. I think I'm going on memory, but I'm almost positive.
I'll check it out. You can always tell the easiest one to see when you see them in the sky. And of course, sometimes if they're 5 miles up, you can't. You know, it's too high.
Right.
You
yeah.
can see the contrail. But when they're much lower, preparing, they're in landing pattern or holding pattern, whatever, you can see them. Southwest is the easiest one because they're this bright bird's egg blue, you know?
Yes, uh-huh.
And they can pick out those things miles away, Southwest plane.
Yeah. Well, I'll bet somebody will be able to help you.
Thanks, Jer. You're the best.
Okay, you're welcome,
Dave. You're the best, my friend.
Good work.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
283-2525 is the number. Open Talk, 283-2525. Hi there, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I've done a little reading on Amelia Earhart.
Yes, uh-huh.
And the plane she was flying was Lockheed.
Okay. Lockheed.
And,
two-engine, right?
Two-engine, yes.
Yeah.
And the navigator was Fred Noonan.
I didn't know the man's name. I knew there was a navigator with her. Yeah.
But they, from what I've read, they never showed up at Holland Island, and that was where they were going to land to refuel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I can tell you about Amelia Earhart.
Well, I was just looking at the, this is the, what is this, NBC webpage? Oh, it's Newsweek magazine. Newsweek has already picked up the story from NBC. So obviously this is creating, you know, some excitement here.
There's a lot of controversy on that. They interviewed some woman over in New Jersey who they claimed was Amelia Earhart, and she got very upset about it. And that's been some years back, you know.
Well, here it is. This is what I'm looking for. July 2nd, 1937, she was last seen taking off from New Guinea to travel to, just what you said, Howland Island. I don't know where that is.
It's in the South Pacific. It's a little, I think it's a little north of New Guinea.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that they outfitted this plane with some extra fuel tanks, just like Lindbergh did when he was flying his little puddle jumper across the Atlantic, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did. I can't remember a whole lot about it, but...
Because a Lockheed, you know, that's a, it's not a real small plane.
No, it was a fairly big plane for us, you know, back then.
Yeah, big engines, and most of the fuel tanks are in the wings of those aircraft. You know, unlike Spirit of St. Louis, didn't have any have any fuel tanks in the wings.
They didn't have any windshield either.
They had fuel tanks behind Lindbergh's head and under his feet, and everywhere there was an extra square inch, they had gas, you know.
Oh, yes. Hmm. So, you know, that's all I can tell you what I know about.
Let me ask you one more thing while I have you on the air here. Do you know, have you heard about Amelia Earhart practicing at what's now Pittsburgh Butler Regional Airport down in Penn Township?
No, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
I have heard that. I'm going to have to check in with Ike Kelly, the airport manager. He might know, be able to give me some more background on this. I'm positive that I've heard it, but I can't remember why, and it just seems so bizarre. You know, what the heck would she be doing here? Why would she be practicing maneuvers here in Butler County? That's strange.
It looks like the person said that she might have had relatives in the area.
That's possible.
I wouldn't know.
That's possible, yeah. Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you.
Okay, have a good day.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk. Caller, thanks for waiting. I appreciate your patience. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'm calling because I don't want to talk about flying per se, but maybe flying on the city streets instead. We're lucky to be out in Herman, and we have the pleasure of driving Ziegler Avenue. And I say pleasure very loosely. Now, I know that many of those houses originally had maybe one car involved with them, or maybe none at all, using public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And probably now there's two occupants with cars in every other house because there's really a traffic jam over there.
Wow.
And I did some investigation, and in Pennsylvania it's supposed to be 28 inches curb to curb. That's 20 feet, excuse me, for a two-lane road with eight feet on street parking. But then the average size of a car these days ends up being 5.95 feet plus mirrors on a regular car, average car, with SUVs ranging around 7 feet 4 inches and any extra mirrors they may have. So we see we probably have not enough space for two cars to pass with parking on Ziegler Avenue.
Yeah.
And we see all those cars parked up on both sides of the street, the one side toward Father Marinara, they're up on over the curb and protecting their vehicle or attempting to. And I think, wow, this is a danger waiting to happen. And I'm so thankful that people haven't gotten hit, because last night as we're coming from the fireworks, people were unloading their cars into the street with little kids themselves, and who knows what state they were in. But it's dangerous. And people are going way too fast. And I just am concerned that this is probably a great place. The city could do some things with getting some off-street parking going. They have the playground there that used to be a playground above Father Marinara that's now for sale by the city. Heck, make that into parking.
Good
and,
idea. Yeah.
You know, do a service to the city and all the residents, because I worry about how many big trucks, including cranes and everything else, use that as a thoroughfare to get into town.
Ziegler Avenue, for listeners who aren't familiar with that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because I used to go to Herman that way, but I don't anymore. I usually go Bonnybrook Road. But Ziegler Avenue comes off Center Avenue on the south side and then turns into Herman Road, right?
It does.
Yeah, okay.
It does. And last year they made that great new bridge there, but the people there end up parking right in the bridge, right at the bridge, and they're really causing a thoroughfare jam up there, too. Because if two cars are passing, you have to stop to get out of their way.
So do they allow, I haven't been on that street in a long time, do they allow parking on both sides or just one side?
They're allowing parking on both sides, and I think at one point, because my husband's originally from here, he said when he was a teenager, he remembers there were no parking signs on the Father Marinara side.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very congested.
Well, I know there are several streets in the city, because I have to come in every day to work, and there are a number of residential streets where they only allow parking on one side because the street's, you know, too narrow to allow it on both sides.
Right. I just wanted to vent a little bit because I have neighbors who say they don't even go to town anymore because of that.
Well, it's okay to vent because, and I do this once in a while too. I had two people, not yesterday, it was Monday. I was waiting at the red light at the Tealy Pizza Shop, you know, right across from where the Worsley building was. And I'm waiting at that red light, and it's interminable when you're trying to cross the main street. It drives me nuts. It's like 2 minutes you got to sit there. And wouldn't you know, just as the light was getting ready to turn, here comes a man and a woman, young man and a woman, walking down the sidewalk right in front of the two lines of cars. We were sitting there, right across the street in front of us. Just the light had just turned green, by the way. The guy beside me had already started to move. And he jammed on his brakes, and I jammed on mine. And these two morons just poke along right in front of us. Yeah, it just makes you so mad you want to spit, you know?
I agree. I think it's a case of common courtesy is no longer the norm in the country.
Well, if you'd have started up, the guy beside me could very easily have hit them if he hadn't have been really on the ball. You know, the light turned green, he started to move, and these two idiots walked right in front of us. I mean, it was just...
That happens a lot down by Butler Ford, too. They'll cross as a car is making the turn on red with no consequence, thinking, oh, someone might be in the crosswalk. They don't even look.
And then you get this look from them, you know?
Yeah. Everyone should be a little bit more alert. I'm concerned for walkers and drivers.
Okay, I feel better now that I've vented, too.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye. 283-2525. It's Open Talk here on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, 283-2525. Hi, caller. Thanks for your patience in waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
I live down in the area of Nixon there.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they have a fence up there now. But about two houses back from that fence is where Dick May lived.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved in to Butler here and set the store up and that. And I was in there several times and purchased music from him.
He was very, very knowledgeable on the history of the airport.
Yes,
very, very knowledgeable. Yeah.
And his mother took over there. I mean, she was always in there. If you needed something, boy, she didn't take long and she could find it.
Yeah. Well, they were a great family. His wife, Joy, too, who just died recently, I mean, relatively recently. Dick died several years ago. They were wonderful people. I knew them both.
They sure were.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had to say.
Thank you. It's kind words. Thank you, my friend. Thanks. Dick and Joy May, great people. I first met them through the Musical Theater Guild because they were both very much involved there. And, of course, you know, I ran a music store, a music shop. But that's where I first came in contact with him, and then later I learned. I think Dick sat on the Airport Authority Board. I think, but in addition, I mean, he was a great, great photographer and collector of photographs and negatives, and he had thousands, probably tens of thousands, of negatives and photographs of local history. Nice guy, great guy. 283-2525 is our number. It is Open Talk on the program today. 283-2525. Amelia Earhart. I have to look that up. I don't necessarily want to read a whole biography of her. Maybe I will. I don't know. But I'll see if I can find a summary of her life that talks about when and why she was at Butler County Airport. And how long? I don't know. Was it like a couple of weeks? Or I don't know. But I've heard the story, so I will try to get a little bit more information for you. Okay, and I'll see what the airport was called back then, too. It's had several names. In fact, it's had several names that I can remember, so probably several more if you go back to the 1930s. There were some other airports around, but that was the biggest, you know, here locally. One of the more interesting airports was right out behind what's now the Butler Crossing and the Butler Commons, the shopping plazas out there, where the, I guess it would be pretty much now where the Walmart the Walmart Supercenter is. Yeah. In that general area, because that kind of sits back from the Butler Commons. I always get it mixed up. Butler Commons is the old Butler Mall, right? And then Butler Crossing is the next one down. Okay. I think they just give them both the same name. They're right next to each other. Anyway, there used to be a small airport there. And we talked about that on the program. I had calls from people who lived right next to it. I got the, how the runway lined up. The end of the runway was right up where is now the Target parking lot, the Target store parking lot. That would be pretty much right at the intersection of Newcastle Road and Duffy, North Duffy. And then the runway, they told me, just kind of angled down from there. If you can imagine yourself at that intersection, an angle down through the Walmart store, and then I don't know how long it was. And it was a grass field, to the best of my knowledge. It was never asphalt or paved or anything like that. I do remember when the old Butler Mall still existed. You remember the Butler Mall, Pat Parker? Montgomery Ward's on one side. What was on the other side? Murphy Mart. Well, there's a name out of the past. Murphy Mart, which was kind of the, that grew out of the G.C. Murphy Five and Dimes. And Murphy Mart, that was at the other end. But behind that mall, the Butler Mall, even, and when was that there? I don't know, 70s, 80s? You could still see where there had been a runway there. Because it was a rear parking lot, and it was even out past the parking lot, perfectly flat. That's where the airport used to be. What was the name of it? I don't know. But there was an airfield there. And apparently pretty heavily used, too. Now, that would have been, back in the day, that would have been outside of town. We don't think of that as being outside of town anymore, but back in the day it would have been. 283-2525 is our number. A little bit more time left for open talk today. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, Dave, what's it called, the Graham Airport down there next to me?
What did
at
you say?
One time.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said the name of it was.
Butler Graham Airport, I think that's what his name was. Butler Graham.
Yeah, it was called Butler Graham, which sounds like somebody's last name. So, whether it was privately owned or what?
I don't know.
Well, some of the airports were, what's now the Butler Farm Show Airport.
Yeah.
That used to be Roe Field.
Yeah.
After the gentleman, I assume the gentleman that owned the lumber yard out there, what was his name? His last name was Roe. I don't know what his first name was.
Dave, I don't know. I don't remember. But I remember that there was a Walmart and that, they had that airport there. I don't know what they called that one.
Yeah, I don't know whether that one had a name or not.
I don't know. Yeah. I remember when passing him and them flying in.
Early days of aviation. Hard to believe how many airfields we had around here, huh?
Yeah.
Thanks for the info, my friend. I appreciate
that. Okay, Dave.
Yeah, Butler Graham, you're right. Thanks. Thanks a lot. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
I think that the owner of the Roe Airfield was Chester.
Chester Roe, yeah. And is that the same guy that owned the lumber yard there in Meridian?
I as far as I can recall, yes.
Mm-hmm. I can remember, I don't remember exactly where it was, but I can remember a long, long time ago, I actually bought some bricks off of him.
That's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, I know. You say bricks? Yeah, well, yeah, somebody told me you could get bricks out there. Sure enough, I went out and I had bricks.
But the other comment that I wanted to make a number of years ago, and I can't tell you, it's probably between 20 and 30 years, there was a balloon takeoff one summer morning, and it was gorgeous, the hot air balloons, and it took place out at the time, I believe it was where you were talking about the airstrip out there off of Duffy Road.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's where it was.
Out by what became the Butler Mall out there.
Right, yeah. Right.
I don't, the only balloons I can remember, they used to do them at the Regatta, you know,
yes.
Out at Lake Arthur, but they don't. I don't think they do them anymore.
They were so impressive. My daughter wanted to go out there, and so we went. I took my daughter and went, and it was just super.
They're beautiful. They're a little dangerous, you know, because you can't. There's very little control over them, and the danger is they, you know, fly in or float into power lines and stuff, you know.
The only way you can control them is either up or down.
Yeah.
There's no east and west.
Otherwise, you're at the mercy of the wind. Yep.
That's it. Yeah.
Hey.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. 283-2525. I think we have time for one more call here before we talk with our guest, Patricia Harmon. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. You've got the last word. Go right ahead.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
That was Jack Rowe was his name, and Chess was his brother.
Oh, so Jack had the lumber yard?
Yes.
Okay. And it was out in Meridian, right?
Oh, yeah, right on Meridian Road.
Okay. Well, I have vague recollections, but the airport was called Rowe Field.
Yes.
Yeah. It's now the Butler Farm Show owns it now.
Right.
Well, thanks for the name.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thanks for taking the time to call. Appreciate it. We have a break coming up. We're going to be talking with a midwife next. A certified nurse. She's a registered nurse, too, and a midwife. Her name is Patricia Harmon, and she writes about it. Yeah. She has a new novel out called The Runaway Midwife. I'm not sure that I've ever talked with a midwife on the program before. I've got lots of questions. Coming up next here on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR, and then later Darlene Sansone from Penn State Extension will be visiting with us on the program today. Hey, I want to tell you, St. Vincent de Paul just about ready to kick off their How Does Your Garden Grow? Excess Garden Produce Collections. They will start Saturday, July 15th. Now, most folks, you know, the garden's still coming on, right? You may have some little teensy golf ball-sized tomatoes, but not quite ready yet. And they're not quite ready yet either. But their collections will begin Saturday morning, July 15th. That's not this coming Saturday. It's the week after that. They'll have volunteers from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard on hand to accept your donations at St. Michael's School Hall. That's right behind the St. Michael's Church on Center Avenue on the south side of Butler. They'll be waiting for you. Just drop off your excess produce, any stuff that, I mean, you don't want to go to waste, right? Sometimes it all comes on at once. And some people plant an extra tomato plant or pepper plant or two, and anything that comes off those plants goes to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They make it easy every Saturday morning. They'll be there from 8 a.m. until noon, starting July 15th. Remember what they say. We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Listeners, we're going to be talking about midwifery on the next segment of the program today. Yes, that's a good subject to discuss, and we have a great novel that's concerned with that topic to discuss today with best-selling author Patricia Harmon, who is out with a new novel entitled The Runaway Midwife. First of all, Patricia, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Well, it's great to meet you too, Dave. I'm not too far away from you, actually. We go through Pittsburgh all the time. I'm just down in Morgantown, which is probably about 2 hours from your studio.
Oh, absolutely. Right down I-79. No trouble. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Practically local, you could say.
Why, we're almost neighbors, for goodness sakes.
listeners,
some of you may know Patricia Harmon. She is USA Today best-selling author, and we'll have time to mention her previous book here as we go along. But she's actually the best of two worlds, not only a best-selling author, but specifically with regard to her new novel, The Runaway Midwife. You are a midwife, right, Patricia?
That's right. I've been a midwife for over 30 years. I started as what we used to call a lay midwife, which was a home birth midwife.
Mm-hmm.
Had very little training, wasn't even a nurse yet. In those days, I guess we thought if we could build a log cabin and plant an orchard, we thought we could just go out and deliver babies. Of course, I did read a few books, and I saw a few babies born in hospitals. But eventually, I went back and got trained as an RN and got my master's in nurse midwifery. So I've kind of seen it all from home birth in log cabins, hippie log cabins, back in the day when we were all going back to the land, and right through up to university hospitals. I've taught midwives. I love it, really. I mean, taking care of women and their families is a vocation. It's not just a job. It has to be something you really love.
Yes, Patricia, being a little bit modest, folks, yes, she started out as a lay midwife, but she has gone on to become a nurse midwife on the faculty of Ohio State University, Case Western Reserve University, and West Virginia University, which is where she lives now. How did you ever end up becoming a midwife? Did you plan for that, or did it happen as kind of a serendipitous event? Talk about that. How'd you end up being a midwife?
There was a point where babies were born. Nowadays, you can have your baby in a birthing room in the hospital. You can hold your baby afterwards. The father of the baby can be there. Even other family members can be there. But back when I first had my first baby in 1970, that wasn't the way. Babies were taken right away taken out of your arms. You know, they did the old spank routine, whisked them off to the nursery. You were alone, really. You couldn't have a father or a companion with you or anybody. And most people were strapped down and had their baby with forceps. It was pretty brutal, really, I felt, and a lot of other people felt that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So my first baby, I would have liked to have at home with a midwife, but there was no midwife. We couldn't find one, and we weren't reckless. So we did go to the hospital, and we found the best hospital we could find. We had to drive miles to get there where the doctor would actually let my husband be there. But I think after that, I started teaching childbirth classes, and then a few people started saying, well, you've actually had a baby. Could you help me? Would you come to my home? And the actual first birth I ever did, I was not thinking that was going to happen. I thought I was just there to teach childbirth classes, and there was a snowstorm, and we couldn't really get out, and I ended up delivering the baby, and I think after that I was hooked. It was such a holy experience, really, and I think the type of person who becomes a midwife has to be a person who is willing to stand on the cusp of danger, really. You really are between life and death. I mean, people's lives depend upon you. And there are a lot of excellent labor and delivery nurses who would never want to be a midwife. They just don't want that responsibility. But I guess I was up for it. And after that, I just became, you know, the midwife of the county that I lived in. It was illegal. I wasn't certified. Nowadays, there are certifications and tests you have to take and things like that. But it was also a lesson in childbirth being a normal part of life, not a big medical event. So, you know, I did maybe 100 home births, and then I eventually went back to the school and became a nurse and then got my master's in nurse midwifery. But that's sort of my story, and actually I have a memoir out about that. It's called Arms Wide Open, and it tells kind of the story of our idealistic back-to-the-land days and how I became a midwife.
Hmm. Yes, it's the whole concept of having a baby. I love the word you used a moment or so ago, by the way. It's a holy experience. That's a perfect word to use. But the way that we look at it, the way that expectant parents look at it now, is totally different from even a generation ago. Even if you go to a hospital, you want a birthing suite. You don't want a sterile hospital room. You want certainly the father there, and sometimes even other family members too. It's Totally different experience. Although midwives are still used, right?
They are. Actually, most people would not even think this in the United States, but 80% of babies worldwide are born into the hands of midwives. Now, in the United States, it's more like 12%, but it's growing. And I think, you know, my husband actually is an OBGYN, and so I'm not saying anything bad about docs, but there is a difference. And one of the things is the midwife stays with the woman throughout the whole labor. We don't just come at the end and kind of catch the baby. And I think being there helps women relax. We get them out of bed. We walk them around. They can have music. I mean, theoretically, a physician could do that as well. But most docs aren't trained to do that. And they have other things on their mind. They've got surgery. They've got complicated patients. Maybe they've got some high-risk OBs that they're worried about. So, you know, my husband was great. He's very supportive of natural childbirth, but he's not going to stay and rub your back. Sorry. If you want that, you've got to get a midwife.
I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on here, but I do want to discuss your novel. And if you missed the beginning of our conversation, listeners, with Patricia Harmon, her new novel is called The Runaway Midwife. That midwife's name is Clara Perry, right?
That's right. Well, Clara Perry, I'll just tell you a little bit about the story. She doesn't have to be a midwife. I mean, she could be anybody, really, male or female, who's just sort of hit the wall. She has a series of devastating events. One is a friend's suicide. One is she's estranged from her daughter, who's almost a grown woman, college student doing study abroad in Australia. And then Richard, her philandering biology professor husband, has an affair, following which a patient dies in labor. So she just feels like she it wasn't her fault, but she's going to be blamed, and she just can't cope with it. At one point she says, the things I would tell my patients, get marriage counseling, maybe start working out, take an antidepressant, those kinds of things, she said, just make me feel totally inadequate. So she does the only thing she could think of. She runs and hides on an island in Canada. So the reason I say that could happen to anyone, I think all of us of a certain age, I mean, maybe when you're 20, nothing bad has ever happened to you, but by the time you're 30 or 40 or 50, you've had a year or two where it just seems like everything went wrong. And one time I did this on Facebook, I put down the question, have you ever thought of running away? And like within 15 minutes, 60 people had said yes. Wow. And a couple of them said, and I actually did it, which I thought was cute.
Well, I see two ironies here. I have a review copy of your book. I haven't been able to get the whole way through it yet. It just came at the tail end of last week. But I see a couple of ironies here. First of all, for your character, Clara Perry, how ironic that what she does is calm expectant mothers and expectant fathers, make everyone feel as relaxed and as calm and as comfortable as possible, and she's experiencing just the exact opposite with these series of traumatic events in her life. The second irony I would see is that a lot of people think about running away when they're a kid. I mean, who didn't do that whenever they were, I don't know, what, 7 or 8 years old, right? You say, Mom, that's it, I'm running away. And here she's doing it much, much later in life, and actually doing it, not just faking it.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think you're right. We all thought of it and had a temper tantrum and maybe packed up our little backpack and got ready to go. And maybe some actually did go, turned around when it got dark and came home. The thing with Clara, she's doing it for real.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was sort of interesting, some of the issues that came out in the book that are contemporary. And one of them was being an illegal immigrant. And here she is in Canada. She has no passport. She had to sneak in.
Well, that's right. You need a passport now to get into Canada.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Well, she was the same way. She got all the way up there, hoped to get to this island that she had gone to once as a young girl, never even mentioned to anybody because it wasn't a big deal, but she had it in her mind that she could hide out there. And when she gets to northern Ohio, the border of Lake Erie, she realizes that you can't get into Canada, just walk in like you used to. And that all changed after 9/11. Mm-hmm. I think that's when they started saying, you know, passports in, passports out. You can't just cross the border.
Yeah, yeah.
But once she's on the island, then she lives in fear, you know, that someone is going to recognize her or realize she's not supposed to be there.
I certainly do not want to give away any more than we have to with your novel. We're certainly going to talk about, not going to talk about the denouement. But does she continue to practice midwifery when she gets to this remote island, or does she reinvent herself totally?
Well, she tries to reinvent herself totally. She tells people that she's a retired ICU nurse and that she's there writing a novel. Wow. She's never written anything. She doesn't even know a novelist. So then people began asking her questions like, oh, what's your book about? So she finds one lie she tells. She says, got to tell more lies. But eventually, yes. She does return to her profession, not in a big way, but in a small way. And I think part of the book is about the healing power of nature and the healing power of community and how we help each other. And when I look at my books, I think that's sort of the theme of all of them. I have 6 books out, 2 memoirs and 4 novels. And, you know, they're different. They're all different. Like this one is contemporary. My other books are historical fiction and memoirs, but when you look at it, I think that's what I'm angling for, is hope, you know. As dark as times can be, there still is hope, and that hope makes us human.
It's interesting that you have your character run away to Canada. We're actually, Patricia, listeners, we're talking with Patricia Harmon, USA Today bestselling author, author of the new novel, The Runaway Midwife. It's interesting that you have her running away to Canada. We're just north of Pittsburgh, so, I mean, I can be in Ontario, Niagara-on-the-Lake, in 4 hours, obeying the speed limit. And I have found that, you know, that rather short distance in time and mileage, it's like being in another world. If I were going to run away, that's a perfect spot, because it just feels like it's a totally new experience. You're in another country.
That's right. And yet people talk like we do, mm-hmm. watch the same TV shows, but maybe no different sports teams. But still, I mean, it's very like the United States, but yet not like it. And I've spent a lot of time up there, and really people are so much like us. Why wouldn't they be,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But yet you do feel like you're somewhere special, you know?
Yeah, they use dollars, but they have $2 coins, the loonies. That always throws you.
I know, and their paper money is now plastic. And
yes,
I'm like,
yes.
Whoa, this is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about your concept of running away from problems. Obviously, your character, Clara, has, I mean, these are significant. These are life-altering problems. Have you talked to people who actually have run away?
I ran away.
Did you?
I did. A couple of times, 2 times in my life. And one was when I wrote this book. I actually had a friend who committed suicide, left no note, much like one of the characters in The Runaway Midwife. And I didn't realize about suicide that, you know, I don't know, your listeners are religious, but I mean, I always thought suicide, the sin of it, was taking a life that God or the Great Spirit gave you, and you weren't supposed to do that. But I realized later that the sin, if you want to say that word, is the people you leave behind. And so that actually really happened to me, and I had a couple of other events, 2 children that one was injured in an accident, grown kids, and another one who was in India and got dengue fever and went blind, but he did recover his vision. But all this happened in 1 year. And then something small happened at the office. I think one of the RNs was snippy to me, and that fell apart. It was like I had no idea how much all those things were affecting me. And I didn't run away so much like like Sarah, Clara. She changes her name to Sarah, but I didn't run away like her, you know, take all the money I could get out of the bank and, you know, just secretly leave in the middle of a snowstorm. But I did just say to my husband, I'm taking a leave of absence, and I went to Canada, and I started this book. So the book is really fiction, but I did sort of fall apart. I mean, I had the luxury, I guess, of being able to do that. You know, I'm married to a doctor. Mm-hmm. I figured, you know, somehow we could afford for me to just quit. And we actually owned our own business, so it wasn't like I had to go to the head of the hospital and say, I'm leaving. So I had this luxury of quitting. But, I mean, think of the people that have much more stress probably than I had. Mm-hmm. And yet, there's no way they could do that. Or maybe they have young kids. My kids were out of the house, you know. If my kids were little, could I have done that? No, I don't think so.
Listeners, I must sneak a quick break in here. We have a couple of more minutes we're able to chat with Patricia. We'll pick up our conversation here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Are you looking for a new pharmacy after hearing news of Kmart closing? Celebrating 10 years of pharmacy care to the Butler community, locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy can fill your prescriptions in just 10 minutes. We take all major insurance plans, stock a variety of over-the-counter medications, and pride ourselves on fast, friendly customer service. And we are excited to offer a $5 off coupon for any transferred prescription from Kmart customers. Some restrictions apply.
Check out Institute Hill Pharmacy on Facebook or stop by their location on East Jefferson Street.
Institute Hill Pharmacy. An old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
If you're tired of being fed to death by the big banks, now is a great time to join the Butler Armco Employees Credit Union. With more free services like checking, online banking, mobile banking, and check deposits by phone, along with the best rates around on autos, home equity loans, and mortgages, you'll quickly see why over 26,000 members have chosen BAECU for their banking needs. It's never been easier to join, so stop in or join online at BAECU.com. You and your wallet will be happy you did. BAECU is federally insured by NCUA and is an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back. Patricia Harmon, our guest here on It's Your Turn on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're talking about her new novel, The Runaway Midwife. Patricia, I could just see listeners kind of shaking their heads in agreement when you were talking about, just before the break there, about what happened in your life that made you actually do this. These are real-life traumas. There's a lot of people that have experienced some of these things. Maybe not all of them in a year's time, but there are people shaking their heads saying, yeah, I can see that. I can see how you would have that feeling. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think it's like you don't really feel like killing yourself like Clara's friend in the novel,
mm-hmm.
but you just would like to wake up and not be here
yeah.
you know, until the problems go away or who knows what. It was just like, I can't do this anymore. It seems self-indulgent when I say that. But I guess everybody has a breaking point. And in the novel, her breaking point is very extreme. But there's a lot of people who, like I said, think about it and have a fantasy of it, and both men and women, you know, but maybe their responsibilities or their economic situation or whatever prevent them. Maybe that's a good thing because we don't all want to be running away at the same time.
There's a lot of
civilization would fall.
An awful lot of people, though, that are stressed out, depressed. That's an epidemic across the country. And yet there's a lot of people, Patricia Harmon, who for some reason, I don't know whether it's stigma or what, they resist going for counseling when that's what they really need.
You know, you're absolutely right. And with my patients, there's so many women that I talk to that are stressed out or, you know, grieving or, you know, having marital problems or problems with their kids. And of course, we all know about the you know, the heroin problems and things. There's so many people like that. And when I say, you know, have you thought of counseling, you know, just taking a pill isn't going to do it. You've got to do something with your life. You know, I'm not saying anything's wrong with antidepressants or medicines like that. They probably save some people's lives. But, you know, when I ask them about counseling, it's like they just look at me like, when would I have time to do that, Patsy?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, sometimes we just have to take the time. We have to take the time to do whatever it takes to make ourselves feel better.
I mean,
or we will have a break.
Let me ask you about one more thing, and I have to let you go here. Can you talk about the differences between modern preparation for childbirth and what we might consider the classic preparations of years gone by?
Well, unfortunately, I think the trend is away from childbirth education. A lot of people now think, I don't need to do anything. I just go to the hospital. I'll get my epidural as soon as I can, and the doctor will get the baby out. Unfortunately, things often or sometimes don't go so smoothly. And if you're not educated in how you can help yourself, what little small things may happen, it can be a traumatic experience. So I really still believe in the childbirth classes. You know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, everybody thought they should go, but the trend is away from that, and I think that's unfortunate. I encourage people to find a good class. You know, you think you maybe read a book and that's good enough, or just listen to your mother's stories, maybe you think that's good enough, but those stories are often, you know, incorrect or horror stories, really. People need to learn about their bodies and about what's going to happen. And I'm not just talking about women. I think it's really important for the guys, too. Too many cesarean sections are in, you know, babies are born, you know, by major operation nowadays. It's something like 30% in the United States. So, I mean, I think educating oneself can help with that. I think people have some responsibility, too, you know, to try to make the birth go as well as they can and make it happy and, like we said before, a holy experience, whether it might be at home or in the hospital or a birthing center. There are lots of alternatives.
We could learn a lot from looking at the way this is approached in other cultures or even here and among Native American Indian cultures of generations ago here in our country. Listen, our time is gone. I could talk longer. Folks, the title of the novel is The Runaway Midwife by USA Today bestselling author Patricia Harmon. It's been a delight. Thanks for sharing time with us, Patricia.
Well, it was lovely, Dave, and I enjoyed talking to you, too.
Thank you so much for that. Maybe again sometime, okay? Keep in touch.
I'd love it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. So long.
Bye-bye.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, friends. I was fascinated to chat with Patricia Harmon there on the program. Yeah, it's a good book she's written there, too. Hey, our next guest visits with us by telephone. She feels like sort of an old friend, even though we very seldom get to see each other face-to-face. Darlene Sansone is with us. She is the Better Kid Care Coordinator for Penn State Extension. I'm shaking hands through the ether here, Darlene. Nice to see you. Nice to have you here again.
Oh, nice to be on with you again.
Well, the way that Penn State Extension has kind of restructured itself over the past several years, there are some really good things that are happening. Unfortunately, I don't get to see a lot of people face-to-face anymore, but that's fine. We're able to take advantage of people's expertise. You're, for example, expertise in child care and so on and so forth. Before, under the old system, you know, each county would have maybe one, two, or three extension educators, and that was it, you know. And you really didn't get to take advantage of all of the expertise from educators from surrounding counties.
Well, that's very correct. When I first started, I was really just doing child care programming and family programming here in Lawrence County. And now, as we look to restructure once again, I picked up Butler and Beaver due to retirements, and now I'm going to actually be part of our new area, seven counties. So we're going to be programming in Butler and Beaver and Lawrence and Mercer and Crawford and Erie and Venango County. It's a nice territory, getting to know some new people, bringing our programs to those who might not otherwise get the opportunity because, you know, there are so few of us in the world now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. I realize this is not your particular bailiwick in your area of expertise, but maybe you can explain a little bit about the changes for me and for our listeners, because we used to have, I hope my terminology is correct, it's been a few years now, we had county extension directors, and then we went to kind of like regional directors, and now there's a new structure that's being implemented by the university, correct?
Right, right. So we at one time had the county director who oversaw the operations here in our county, which was Janice Hassan.
Mm-hmm.
Janice moved into the district director when she took over Butler, Beaver, and Lawrence. And as of July 1st, we now have a new area, which will include those seven counties that I just mentioned. So we have two new people at the helm. Brian Dickinson, who is our 4-H educator over here, has taken over the business operations management position for those seven counties. And John Lochner, who a lot of people have heard of because of his work with the Marcellus Shale, is now going to be the client relations manager of those seven counties. So, you know, they'll be traveling in the counties. They'll spend one day each week in those counties, or probably more like a half a day since we have seven counties and five working days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're hoping to build some new relationships and bring some new expertise and some new thoughts and some new programming to the counties and really, you know, get it up and running where we had some shortfalls before.
Well, I don't know, Brian Dickinson. John Lochner has been a guest on the program with
right.
us probably three or four times because a lot of interest in Marcellus Shale, obviously, and he
mm-hmm.
has the expertise there. But over the past several years since the initial restructuring, my goodness, we got to meet so many new extension educators here on the program. Walter Baumgartner and Karen White and Ginger Fenton and more recently Anna Hummel and,
right.
and Maria Graziani, and the list goes on. And we didn't know these people before. So I think you have to look at the positive side of it. Obviously, for those of you who are working for extension, it's some significant changes that you've got to get used to in the workplace. But all for the best, I think, in terms of trying to share your educational expertise with as many people as you can, and at the same time, be fiscally responsible. I don't have to tell our listeners, I'm sure, that higher education, and don't forget here, we're talking about Penn State University, this Penn State Extension, they've got to watch their dollars pretty closely these days, don't they?
Yes, they do. And we really have to, you know, be smart about it. Look at it as a business now. You know, gone are the days, which a lot of people were upset about, that all of our programs can be offered for free. Certainly on our websites, you know, if you go into the extension websites, there are a lot of things that are still free. There's some, you know, quick videos now, the Learn Nows and things like that. But, you know, it's a new day and new registration processes and, just, you know, everything in its place and in its time.
So you specifically, are you still going to be working with Better Kid Care, or will you have more responsibilities, or how does it shake down for you, darling?
Well, with Janice's retirement, I've taken over a little bit more of the Family Strengths program, so I'll actually be part of that team up through the university, you know, have somebody overseeing me from the university a little bit. But any kind of family programming right now in those seven counties is going to fall on my shoulders temporarily. My Mercer counterpart retired as of Friday, and the person doing the Better Kid Care app in Erie leaves at the end of August. So if they don't replace those people, you know, it'll be me. It'll be
mm-hmm.
me doing, all, you know, the child care training and any of the family programming that I do. You know, over here I'm doing some parent co-parenting for our course. I'm doing some truancy classes for parents. Have some interest with that. Over in Butler County, I've been contacted by a couple of the school districts in the cyber school over there. So, you know, those kind of programs will come under my watch now. And, you know, as many as I can get out to do, that's what I'll be doing.
There will be many of our listeners who aren't familiar with the new Penn State Extension. I mean, they may still think of it, and this goes back quite a few years now, where mainly it was agricultural information. Now, obviously, you're still very much helping the agricultural community, and whether it's dairy farmers or vegetable growers or whatever, but there's so much more available now so much more information, so much more educational materials available from Penn State Extension. We mentioned the Marcellus Shale. Your particular area has been better kid care. Can you explain just what that was for people who, or what it is for people who don't know about it?
Well, better kid care started about 15 years ago. One of the professors in the Department of Rural Sociology and Agriculture saw a need for child care training to the agricultural community. Some of those women were staying home and caring for children in their home, unlicensed many times, not really registered with the state. And he saw a need for some professional development and for them to be looked at more as a business versus just somebody sitting around in their home. You know, we're not just babysitters. And so he really saw that need. So he started way back then a program where he would be at the university and he would deliver to all 67 counties via satellite dishes some professional development. And it has evolved now into an online presence with hundreds of modules, and also still those of us out here doing face-to-face training, professional development that's needed in the early childhood arena.
And, of course, there's a continuing need, a growing need for this, because that's the way American society has evolved. It's a rare family anymore where at least one parent is at home all the time.
Right. It's very, very difficult to really be a stay-at-home mom now in the way that today's economics are. I know that because I tried that 35 years ago really stay at home and be a mom to my children, but I realized that I needed that second income, and so I started watching children in my home, bought a center, sold that center, worked for somebody else, and you know, it has evolved into a true profession for me now, providing professional development for other people. And I just got back from a week in Texas just looking at the whole quality of child care across the United States. You know, many of those mandates are coming through the federal government. Pennsylvania child care providers now are mandated to take 6 hours of health and safety training once they start in their profession. That came because the federal government said, we need this, you know, everybody needs to have this basic.
And really, when you look at it from, you know, from any parent's point of view, they should welcome this. I mean, you don't want to just, you know, drop your kid off and say, okay, you're going to be here for the next, 8 hours. You want more than just a glorified babysitter.
Right. We do want that today. And the child care programs, the preschool programs out there, whether they be through a church or a school district or, you know, a child care center, really are getting our children ready for kindergarten in today's age. You know, our parents can't stay home and give us some of those basic skills anymore, or grandmas aren't always available. So we really have changed and evolved, and we're looking at quality. I can remember the days when people would call up and say, you know, how much can you charge? How much do you charge? And can my kids start tomorrow? And I was just horrified, thinking I would not just look at cost alone of a program that I'm going to send my children to. I really want to look at, you know, are they safe? What's the environment look like? Where are they located? What kind of skills do the caregivers have? You know, have they taken some basic things like mandated reporting and first aid and fire safety, so in an event of emergency, they know how to get my child out of that building and safe there. So it really is very, very important to look at all of the pieces when I'm going to send my child to child care or I'm going to send them to a preschool program.
Very important. We need to take a break here, but when we come back, I think it was the state, I believe, that came up with the, for lack of a better phrase, a rating system that parents could be able to look at, you know, some sort of a neutral outside evaluation of these concerns that you were just outlining there. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Darlene Sansone is with us. She is the Better Kid Care Coordinator for Penn State Extension. And we'll pick up our conversation with Darlene again in just a moment, right after these words.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care, There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Talking with Darlene Sansone, Better Kid Care Coordinator for Penn State Extension, serving our region, Butler County, and several other counties now in this region. I mentioned before the break, Darlene was outlining several concerns that any conscientious parents would have if they're trying to look for a place for child care for their kids. If both parents work outside the home, you need a place for the kids, the young kids. What are you going to do? Well, Pennsylvania does have a rating system. It's called Keystone Stars, right, Darlene?
Yes, it is. And Keystone Stars actually started about 2001. It was a voluntary program at that point. Centers could choose to enter the program and follow through additional procedures, you know, updating policy and procedure manuals, getting more things in your center as far as materials for the children, more professional development for your staff, and all of that was a voluntary program, and you could earn a star rating, much like our hotels have, 1, 2, 3, 4. Starting in July, it's not a voluntary program anymore.
Wow.
So it's come out a little ways since then. So right now what we're looking at is anybody licensed through the Department of Human Services, formerly the Department of Public Welfare, or the licensed by the Department of Ed, which many of our preschool programs are actually coming into the Keystone Stars program. So it is mandatory for all of our certified child care facilities to be part of this. And the first premise that they have to really adhere to is all of the basic health and safety pieces. So they'll come in at a star one now, and they're going to focus on the health and safety issues. As I said, the federal government has mandated everybody take the 6 hours basic health and safety training. That will be a part of all new staff going forwards, new staff orientation, and that's going to be an absolute if we want to, in Pennsylvania, continue to get funds which help subsidize children in the child care spot. So it's an absolute. You're coming in at that level right now.
So that is effective as of this past Saturday, July 1st?
Yes.
So that will be in effect for the start of the coming school year, I guess, huh? Another month or so, a couple of months.
Right.
Down the road.
It's in effect now. You know, we're looking at even pulling in early Head Start and Head Start programs in those private preschools, you know, Montessori schools or things like that to try to get them to understand what true quality looks like in Pennsylvania. So if we can pull them all in, which has really been an effort for about the last 10 years or so, to not really see that difference between a child care program that is a standalone program and a child care program that might be part of a school or might be part of a church, you know, to look at us all the same. We're all providing quality services for those early years of the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really looking at that, you know, individual needs, but the holistic approach for every child and every parent out there. you know, what can we do to sustain those good ongoing relationships and improve the quality of care that's out there, so that if I'm a mom working, I don't have to think about, oh, no, what's happening out there with my child.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's good. Obviously, there'll be different levels of quality in the programs, but the basic, you know, I mean, the days of just dropping your kids off at, you know, some neighbor's house who's decided she wants to do this or he wants to do this on a, you know, kind of an informal basis. With today's safety concerns, health concerns, no, there's got to be some sort of control over it, I think. I think it's good.
Yeah. Well, and I really like that there's a little bit more leeway in the new system than there was in our former system. Of course, we know some of those unanswered questions out there, like how many hours do I exactly need? Because, you know, if you're the employee, you want to know exactly what do you need in order to continue working in that program. Mm-hmm. And some of those things are being implemented over the course of this year. Right now, this is sort of the pilot stage. They're piloting some programs through this. We have sort of a full year to get it up and going and, you know, take out the bumps in the road. But we also know that there are some initiatives to change the state regulations. It's about time to do that. So they didn't want to be stuck into things that might be too specific in the new performance standards and might not agree with the new regulations once they come out. So they really tried to make it a little broader for all of those programs to be able to look at. One of the things that I really liked, I mentioned that I was in Texas for that quality rating conference last week. It was very interesting to listen to people from Florida and New Jersey who have only been doing this maybe 2 years. Every time you said you were from Pennsylvania, they went, oh, you have that really nice system in place already. Mm. And we would say, well, we're changing some things. But it was nice to listen to them talk about really what does continuous quality improvement look like and what are the things that we have to do in order to see that. And if you want to continue to change, you always know that you have to do some self-assessment. You know that you have to continue to keep up in your field and get those courses of the professional development you need. And you just can't stay stagnant. So, you know, I remember when my program first started and I had like a one-page policy and procedure manual for my staff and a one-page for my families, by the time I left, it was much more comprehensive because I learned as I went what I needed to do.
It's nice to know that Pennsylvania is kind of in the vanguard here, too, the cutting edge of this nationwide. And I did see, I haven't had a great deal of time to digest the state budget yet, since it was only approved at the tail end of last week. Probably take a couple of months to digest that thing. But
right.
I did see that there was new money, and actually quite a bit of new money for pre-K counts and Head Start, which is kind of surprising. Good to see.
Well, it is good to see. And again, those programs are costly. What most people don't realize is all that early care money, when you see those pre-K counts or the Head Start programs, often the child care subsidy that a lot of our families in the Butler County are receiving are, you know, written into the fine print in those, some of those things. So mm-hmm. It's important to keep those pieces alive because that is what's subsidizing our families. And when we talked to the legislators, they said, we hear from the child care folks, we need to hear from the parents that they want those programs to continue. You know, we need that phone call from them saying, I can't work if I don't have those kind of things out there. So mm-hmm. we're hoping that all stays in the budget because it is important for our children and our families.
We need to take a final quick break here, check the midday lottery numbers. I have one other thing. I must get to this as soon as we come back with Darlene, because something about communication preference that the university is instituting, I have no idea what that is, so maybe we'll learn a little bit more about that when we come back, and that'll be in just a moment or so after we take a look at the midday lottery numbers. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR, back after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 7878. The pick 3, 148. 148. The pick 4, 2544. The pick 5, 83472. The wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt, 1, 7, 16, 20, and 21. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Welcome back, listeners. We're wrapping up our conversation with Darlene Sansone. She is the Better Kid Care Coordinator for Penn State Extension. So I mentioned before the break there, Darlene, about the communication preference that the university, Penn State University, is instituting. Can you explain in layperson's terms for us what that's all about, what that means?
Yes, I can. We all know that many of us receive via the postal service or through our email a lot of mail or a lot of things that we really don't want to receive. And it's very hard to unsubscribe to most of those publications or most of those pieces of mail.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the Canned Spam Act, Penn State can no longer just send out solicitations, and any businesses really can't. So Penn State instituted several things. When we go out to do a professional development or a course or a workshop now, we give you a little communication preference form and says that we're going to only send you information based on your choices of things that you want to receive. And you have the option to receive those via email or by mail. So if you wanted to sign up for something like the ServSafe or your pesticide licensing classes that you have, we could only send those communications about upcoming classes via those sources based on your preference. So just because you're on a mail list for ServSafe and you're taking your certification for a restaurant does not mean I can send my child care materials to you. So Penn State instituted that, and you know, if you stop into any of our offices or if you're at one of our classes, you can sign up and you know, we'll enter that information. But we also have the extension.psu.edu/aboutme to be able to sign up for those of you who you know, maybe aren't close to an office and you want to receive something maybe on drinking water, or maybe you're, you know, wanting to take part in the upcoming Master Gardeners class, or you want to produce wine now, you know, you could put that information into the website, and anytime there is a class or there's some communication coming out, we would be able to tailor those offers to you and, you know, make sure that it's relevant to something you want to, and we can get out that information to you.
I think that's absolutely fabulous. Who among us doesn't get overwhelmed with junk email these days? You know, the mistake that I made several years ago was, you know, when the companies would ask, you know, can we have your email? I, like an idiot, you know, said, sure. And now, years later, you're still getting pestered with this stuff. And I like what the university is doing. Is this a long, involved process if someone wants to log onto this website here and set up their preferences?
It took me less than 2 minutes to do it, and I'm not a computer tech person. But I went in, and I always think that if I'm going to tell somebody else to do something, I need to know how to do it. So I went in less than 2 minutes, I had filled out the form with some basic information like my name and my street address and a phone number however I wanted, an email address. And then I just checked off the list of, you know, things that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are certainly probably 200 different things on the form, but I just checked through the things that I wanted to see further communication about.
So, sounds like a good idea to me. The website, again, is
extension.psu.edu/aboutme. We'll take you right to that site.
And you can opt in to program notifications in just a couple of minutes. Good deal.
And we can opt you out as soon as you send us something.
Yeah, that's right. Opting out, too. Yeah, that's another thing. Sometimes you get into a company's email, try to get out of their address book. Yeah, right. Not very easy to do. Hey, Darlene, appreciate talking with you today. As always, it's always very informative when you you join us, and we'll look forward to our next conversation. Darlene Sansone, Better Kid Coordinator for Penn State Extension for our, I guess now I say our region, right? Is that the correct terminology?
Yeah.
For our region. Darlene, take care. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Sure. Bye-bye now. She's a nice lady. I enjoyed talking with Darlene. Okay. That wraps up our program for today. Wednesday. Had to stop and think for a second. Wednesday. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll have guests from the Musical Theater Guild, Butler.